Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Into Money. I'm Chase Cotnor with Fidelity Investments. Joining me today, as always, is Tony Zhang, the Chief Strategist at Options Play. Tony, it's definitely been a while since I've spoken with you here on the show, so I'm absolutely excited to dive deeper into options, trading, and markets. It's great to have you here today. Now, as a quick note, as we hop into today's show, we've got a lot of registration questions that came through about options and a beginner episode and kind of options 101 and basics. And so I just want to let you know that at the end of today's broadcast, we're going to actually share a resource for an upcoming webinar that's going to cover all of that and more in the coming weeks. So stay tuned to the very end and we'll cover some of that for you folks. In addition, one other housekeeping item for today, a lot of viewer registration questions that came in asking about, is there a place on Fidelity where we can see previous episodes? And so I thought it just might be worth a moment to share that with everybody here today. So on Fidelity, the easiest way to find this is going to be fidelity.com/inthemoney, just like the show sounds. And so whenever you go to that website, you'll see the actual layout, if you will, of fidelity.com. You'll see the previous episodes. There's typically a couple of weeks listed there at any one given time. I should also point out that towards the bottom of the page, you can register for upcoming events and access additional resources that are related to options and or trading. Now, I know we mentioned the registration questions. We've really been trying to dive in and see what everyone's got on their mind these days when it comes to options. We had a viewer named James ask us, what are some of the specific factors around the economy, such as inflation or the central bank changes or policy shifts, and how are those impacting trading decisions? And James, when I saw that question, I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I've been wondering too. And so, Tony, what I would love to do today is start off our macroeconomic conversation, maybe addressing some of James's comments and others that might impact option traders.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chase, and thank you for that question. Inflation is definitely the most important indicator that we're keeping an eye out on outside of the earnings season that just kicked off. And this week we got two prints. We got the CPI print and the PPI print. Both of those came in cooler than expected. The headline CPI fell by 0.4% month over month, which is the largest drop we've seen in over 6 years. We saw the core CPI ease back to 2.6% and the headline number eased to 3.5% year over year. So this is showing us that at least in June, the inflation numbers are moving in the right direction. Earlier this month, we were still looking at potentially rate hikes at the end of this year and talking about potentially, and rate cuts were really not even in the discussion. However, with this recent inflation print, the probability of a rate hike has reduced by a substantial amount. However, one of the things that I think we must pay attention to is the fact that the 10-year yield, despite two back-to-back prints of inflation coming better than expected, barely moved. We're still around just shy of 4.6%. And what this is telling me is that the bond market at the moment still sees these inflation prints as more of a one-off energy-driven decline that may not necessarily translate into durable disinflation. And a lot of that is driven by the increasing escalation that we continue to see in the Middle East, where the Strait of Hormuz has essentially gone back to effectively being closed. Iran the U.S. has imposed that blockade on Iran's oil, and now the Strait of Hormuz is closed. Now, oil still remains below $80, which is arguably at this stage a positive, meaning the markets are still optimistic that a solution can be made relatively soon. But we are starting to see signs that gasoline prices are starting to creep up. Diesel prices have gone up by over 20% here in the last couple of weeks. So this is showing us that there's definitely some concerns around here. If you look at the VIX, still trading around 16%, tells us that the equity markets are not particularly concerned here at the moment. So, you know, the S&P 500 is just shy, it's just sitting just shy of that 7,600 major resistance level, you know, within effectively less than 1% of the all-time highs. However, we've failed to break out above those levels. And from my perspective, when I look at a chart of the S&P, I don't see a lot of support until you get down to around the $7,100 level, which is implying potentially up to a 6% downside risk to the next support level. So while the market remains in an uptrend, the risk reward as we fail to break out to new all-time highs starts to skew a little bit more here to the downside, because the rotation trade that we've been talking about over the last 4 or 5 weeks remains very much in place. The markets, as you can see, is very much sell anything related to semiconductor hardware, semiconductor stocks, and essentially buy everything else. You see the SOX index down more than 3-4% here in just the last couple of days. It broke a key support level at 555. And now the downside target here for SOX is, you know, we don't really see a lot of support down into the 465 range. So from my perspective, I see some downside risks, further downside risks within semis. At the same time, all the capital that's flowing out of semis is being poured back into the rest of the markets, which is why we see the NASDAQ down nearly 1% today, but the equal weight up nearly 1%. So that does give us a healthy amount of rotation here for the markets. So I'm not outright bearish here right now, but if that rotation starts to fade, if we start to see more selling across the board, that's really where some downside risks are in the markets here right now. And then if you look at kind of earnings season, so far we've been off to a good start in terms of earnings data. We have a nearly 90% beat across the board in the early reports. The banks have all provided strong earnings and guidance here, which is a key factor here right now, is to see that the banks are healthy, that they are implying a relatively healthy consumer into the second half of this year. Between Delta, the banks, that's the picture that we're getting here right now. However, if you saw TSMC's earnings this morning, that sends us a clear message that beats themselves are not enough, at least in the AI complex, where the bar is set incredibly high, that guidance matters, and any signs of deceleration, any blemish on these earnings reports can send these stocks, especially these high-flying semiconductor stocks, lower here. So my expectation here for this earnings season is a fair amount of individual security volatility this season.
Yeah, and Tony, that's really interesting. For me, the takeaway, there's a couple different factors at play. One, it seems to be that the AI trade, whether it's individual names or maybe even some sector ETFs or ETFs that are focused on AI, that there's a level of increased scrutiny that we're starting to see play out in the market. In addition to that, at the same time, you mentioned rotation. While that's occurring, we are seeing some rotation to some other names. And so, you know, investors and traders have this juxtaposition to deal with, which is, tech maybe is getting extra scrutiny, but the rest of the market is maybe experiencing some potential, you know, opportunities and things of that nature. So it's always interesting for us as traders, I think, to take away when we see this, these news items, that these developments, to realize that we as traders have control as to where we allocate our capital. So just kind of keep that in mind, folks. It doesn't have to be all into one or all the other. We can sort of pivot as needed. And one other note I would just mention here is that as we move deeper into earnings season, that could very quickly change, right? As these companies either provide and beat guidance or disappoint. So we'll have to wait and see. But given this backdrop, Tony, as I look across the marketplace, how do we make this actionable? Right, focusing on the changes in tech, but also the rotation in some of those other sectors. What are you looking at in terms of, let's say, our first trade for today?
Yeah, the first trade I want to take a look at here is still within the AI complex. But, you know, what's really interesting about the recent rotation we've seen is that we've seen the sell-off in the semiconductor hardware space, while the hyperscalers over the last 4 or 5 weeks have underperformed. But as the sell-off in the semis are starting to accelerate, we're actually seeing some more rotation back into the mega cap hyperscaler space, especially the ones that generate a substantial amount of free cash flow from other parts of their business. And Meta certainly sits at that particular intersection of being a AI play, but has a substantial business on the side that's essentially funding it. And I think that's really the opportunity that has presented itself after these stocks have underperformed over the last few weeks, even the last couple of months, and provides, in my opinion, an interesting entry point. So if you look at Meta here, we have been underperforming here for the better part of this year so far. And it recently just broke out above 640, which is a major resistance level that also corresponds with the descending trend line that has been in place since September of last year. And what this is telling us is that the narrative in the underperformance here for Meta is starting to shift a little bit to the upside, because the market was fairly concerned about all of these hyperscalers AI CapEx expenditure. They were concerned that that was going to damage margins without any clear signs for monetization. But I think we're starting to show, or at least Meta is starting to show, that AI is starting to directly show up in the revenue numbers in the form of better advertising numbers, that the CapEx spend is already starting to show some meaningful growth in terms of revenue, even though it's not necessarily directly tied to AI per se, and that the concerns around margin risk was a little bit overblown. And if you see that the breakout here on Meta is not only breaking out on an absolute basis, it's also breaking out on a relative basis. So it's outperforming the S&P 500 as it's doing so. And this improving relative strength is what gives us the confidence to believe that this has the potential to get back towards the all-time highs around 765 and even 795 as the broader, larger upside targets here. And if you look at Meta from a business perspective, it's trading at only 20 times forward earnings. And this is a company that has net profits north of 30% and growth rates that are in the 20 to 30%, 15 to 20% range in terms of top and bottom line growth. So trading at 20 times forward earnings is an incredible discount to the industry and an incredible discount to the entire market, which is why I think the valuation look incredibly compelling. The business Q1 revenue grew 33% year over year. Ad impressions continue to grow as well, and operating margins have remained has held steady despite their heavy AI investments. So, you know, as free cash flow continues to increase, you know, first quarter free cash flow was somewhere around $12 billion. You know, that's the cash flow that they need to fund their AI ambitions, and trading at 20 times forward earnings, I think, is incredibly attractive for looking at an entry point as the stock has been under pressure here over the last few months and now starting to reverse here to the upside. So the trade structure that I want to use here to try to capture that upside is to buy a call spread. Now, Meta is an expensive stock. To buy 100 shares of the stock, you need roughly, you know, close to $70,000 to buy 100 shares of this particular stock. So what I want to use is an option structure that would allow me to capture that upside for a fraction of that capital. I'm going out to that August expiration, and I'm looking at buying a 660, 695 call spread. Earlier today, you can pay about $15.50 per share for that debit spread. And that means you're risking just a little over $1,500 per contract to control 100 shares. And what I'm looking for is some confirmation that this breakout can continue moving higher here. And if it does, that gives me the opportunity to turn the profits from this particular trade and roll it into a broader, more bullish trade, you know, trying to target that all-time high.
And Tony, when we look at that trade structure, it reminds me of a common question we get. And in fact, as I look at this week's registration questions, we actually got one from Valentino who asks, is the 1.5 to 1 risk to reward ratio, is that like a reasonable target when it comes to these types of strategies? And, you know, as I look at this one specifically, you know, we're probably closer to like 1 to 1 risk versus reward. And I should note, sometimes people actually reference that number reward to risk. So it just kind of depends on who you're talking to. But just in general, Tony, when you look at this, is that 1.5, that 1 risk to reward, is that reasonable? Is that maybe a target that you specifically look for? Or is there like a rule of thumb that traders use when it comes to the strategy?
Yeah, that's a really fantastic question. We tend to find that debit spreads like this, the general rule of thumb that we shoot for as a default is usually a closer to around 2-to-1. So, however, with that 2-to-1 risk reward ratio, we typically will have certain variations to it. So sometimes when we're shooting for a big move on earnings, we might actually trade an out of the money call spread to shoot for about a 3-to-1 risk reward ratio. In this particular case, I've chosen to adjust this to a nearly a 1-to-1 risk reward ratio because of the fact that, you know, this stock does remain in this downtrend. This is an early potential breakout here that could potentially fail. So my goal is to try to reduce risk as much as possible, which is why I'm using a relatively narrow call spread here, risking only $1,500, which if you look at comparing that to the nearly $70,000 that's required to buy 100 shares of this stock, we're looking at just around 2% of the stock's value that I'm risking here. And I've specifically chosen a strike price, $695, where if it does get up to that range, that would be confirmation that this breakout has followed through. And in that particular example, that's where I would start adjusting this position to shoot for further upside here. So I'm specifically choosing a debit spread here that has essentially zero time decay. So if the stock doesn't move in a month from now, I'm not particularly losing any capital in this particular trade structure, because typically when you buy a call spread or a call option, if the stock doesn't move, you'll lose the time decay or lose the extrinsic value of that specific option. In this particular case, I have very little of that. And that's done on purpose because it's early stage. I'm still in a sector that is currently in decline or certainly on the downside, which is why my number one priority in these types of trades is capital preservation. And that's why I've chosen a structure like this, where I'm closer to a 1-to-1 rather than a 2-to-1 or 3-to-1, where I'm taking on a lot more extrinsic value risk in a trade like that.
Yeah, understood. And so really, I think the takeaway for Valentino or anybody else is, yes, you're going to manage that risk from like a risk to reward perspective, but we're also going to manage the capital that's being used. And in this case, as you pointed out, Tony, time, right? Like what's that theta or sort of time component with an options trade? So yeah, love to see that. Now I want to transition because we have a different kind of trade setup coming up next. We'll probably talk a little bit more about capital, risk, and time. But first, let's dive into the second trade, Tony. What's on your radar?
Yeah, the second trade I want to take a look at here is Reddit. We're probably all familiar with the website, but not everyone's familiar with Reddit as a business, because for a long time, investors have had a tough time valuing this company as a social media platform because there was a lot of concerns as to whether or not they were going to be able to monetize the user base of that particular platform without essentially destroying the culture of what is Reddit. But it seems like over the last few quarters, Reddit has proven to us that the two engines of performance advertisement and AI data licensing are both performing incredibly well while keeping users on the platform. And this is why I think the market is starting to reprice Reddit and starting to pay attention to here right now. Because if you look at the chart, Reddit recently has been forming this base here below 180 and just broke out above that just a couple of weeks ago and started to form this base above 180. It's been forming a base between 180, 190, 200 and actually starting to poke its way up above 200. And that starts to bring some upside targets into play. The 227, 260 levels are interesting upside targets here, and the 52-week high is 280. So you have a lot of potential upside here if Reddit starts to show that growth is in play without damaging their users, their active daily users. And investors are seemingly starting to show some some interest, especially if you look at the relative strength outperformance with the breakout here. That's showing that this stock is not just breaking out on an absolute basis, it's breaking out from a relative basis, showing us that potential institutional accumulation is starting to happen in this particular stock as it breaks out above that 180 level.
Yeah, Tony, that's really interesting when it comes to that relative strength component. I know for a lot of our option traders, they tend to focus on charts and technical analysis as a timing mechanism and sort of, I would say, like a research process. Just real quickly, because we've mentioned it a few times in today's conversation, but also I know on this program, we bring it up pretty frequently. Can you just break down that relative strength comparison a little bit more? Like, why are we looking at that compared to... When I say that, let me take a step back. Why are we looking at Reddit in this relative strength comparison in proxy or in compared to the S&P 500? Like, how does that help if you're like a technical or options trader?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because one of the most common questions that we get with breakout type trades is, what do you look for to confirm that particular breakout? And from my perspective, one of the most important indicators to look at to try to get a sense for whether or not this breakout has legs or if it has the potential to fail back and turn back into the trading range is relative strength. Because relative strength tells us that not only is this stock breaking out, that the rest of the market is buying this stock at a faster clip than they're buying any other stock that's breaking out. That's what relative strength is telling us, is that this is not just outperforming relative to itself, it's outperforming relative to the market. And that's a sign of potential institutional accumulation. And if that's the type of confirmation that I typically like to see, that gives me more confidence that this breakout has legs to continue moving higher rather than risking that this pulls back and goes right back into the trading range. So it's a great question. And then if you look at the business here, you know, it is relatively expensive from a valuation perspective. It's trading at nearly 40 times forward earnings. But I do point out, if you look at the underlying fundamentals, there are almost no social media companies, let alone software companies, trading at the types of valuations with the type of growth that we have. We're talking about 35 to 45% revenue and EPS growth. We're talking about double, if not triple, the industry median for these types of growth numbers. And on top of that, net margins are approaching 30%, which is nearly triple the industry median. So while it trades at a premium valuation, those valuations, I think, are more than supported by the fast growth and margins compared to its peers. Compare that to Snapchat and Pinterest. They're nowhere near in terms of growth rates, and they're certainly nowhere near in terms of profitability. So I think Reddit is starting to prove that their advertisement business is starting to generate meaningful cash. That business grew 74% year over year. Revenue has grown 60% for seven straight quarters now. This is showing us that this is not just a blip on the radar. This is starting to become meaningful growth for them. And now they started to sell. They've entered these licensing deals with both Google and OpenAI to essentially feed their AI models with the data from Reddit users. And this is all while they increase active daily users by nearly 44%. So this is really where the biggest concern that people had was that if Reddit tries to monetize the business, that the users will, that the culture of Reddit will be destroyed and that users will leave the platform. That is proving out to be not the case. And that's why I think the market is starting to pay attention here to Reddit. So the trade structure that I want to use here is different than the trade that I'm using for Meta. I'm selling premium here. I'm selling the August 21st, which is the same monthly expiration, but I'm looking at selling the 190 put and then buying the 170 put against that. Earlier today, you can collect about $8.40 in terms of credit for that credit spread. And that means that you're risking only around $1,100.60 for that credit spread. And this is a risk reward ratio of under 2 to 1. Typically, you don't see these types of risk reward ratios on a credit spread. You're risking typically $2 for every $1 you can potentially make. In this particular case, I'm actually risking less than $1.50 for every $1 I can potentially make. And that's why I've chosen to use a put spread, a bull put spread in this particular case, because options are very expensive here for Reddit. And I can trying to take advantage of that by selling options rather than being a buyer of a call option.
Yeah. And Tony, you mentioned that 190 level. You know, I know we had the chart up previously, but it makes sense, I think, for our technical traders to look at that and go, oh, that 190, that's the breakout level, right? That's how we're choosing that strike prices. It's in relation to the technical setup, or in this case, the technical breakout around that 190. And, you know, when we think about it, right, technical analysis, we're just trying to use that as traders as some timing mechanism and also a way for us to be articulate about how we're choosing these strikes versus just some random number on the option chain. Okay, let's pivot for just a moment here, Tony. Let's hop into a look back. So we've gone through two new trades, but this is probably honestly my favorite part of the show, which is looking at a previous trade we've talked about, breaking down maybe what has happened since then and what are we going to do moving forward. What's our look back for today, Tony?
Yeah, in early June, I laid out a bullish thesis here on Alphabet. And at the time, we sold the July 365, 345 put vertical, and we sold that for about $7.50. And since then, Alphabet has had a pretty wild swing since then. It's traded all the way down nearly to 300, climbed all the way back up towards 365, and now we're at around 370 as of today, just a day before expiration. So what we sold initially for $7.50 in credit is now worth about $1.25. So we've gained nearly a little over 80% of the maximum profit on this particular trade. Now, my views on Alphabet remains quite strong here, very similar to my views on Meta, if not stronger. So what I'm doing here is as this trade is about to expire, I'm going to roll the July 365, 345 put vertical out to August with the same strike price. So I'm keeping the same strike price, but I'm moving the July expiration out to August. And earlier today, you can collect another $7 roughly and 20 cents of credit. So, and this is a good example of when you sell premium with an option, even if the stock doesn't move, like in this particular case, we went from 366 to 370, barely budged from a percentage perspective, we still made 85% of our profit potential on a trade. And that's the advantage that you have of selling premium or selling options, is that if the stock doesn't move, you can potentially earn up to 100% of the maximum gain potential. Now, we're a day away from expiration. I think it's better for us to just simply roll this out to August and extend our thesis out to August and collect more premium in this particular case.
Got it. And a common question we get, Tony, and John asked us in our viewer registration questions, which is like, why would we roll options? The way I used to explain it back was when I was on the trading strategy desk was, it's really just a convenient way to close an old trade and then place a new one, as long as your original thesis still remains relatively intact. But I'd be curious, Tony, just in this trade instance specifically, is that what you're seeing? Is that why we're rolling? Because the thesis is the same, or is it just because it's easier? Maybe just break that down for John, just one step further. Why roll as opposed to just two separate trades?
Yeah. So the first part, you're absolutely right. My thesis remains intact for Alphabet, which is why I'm rolling this out from July to August, collecting more premium. I collected $7.50 on that first July spread. I'm going to try to collect roughly the same amount here for August. The one rule that I do have in place with regards to rolling is that I only roll profitable trades. I never roll a losing trade. And this is the best way to think about this is if you had invested in two businesses a year ago, one business is doing incredibly well, the other one is struggling, which one would you invest more money into this year going forward? You probably would consider in reinvesting your money in the business that's doing well and maybe stop investing money into the business that's struggling. And that's the same thing when you think about a trade that's approaching expiration. One trade is profitable, one trade is not. One, the market is proving your views to be correct, and the other one is proving your views to be incorrect. Where do you want to allocate your capital? So in this particular case, the market has proven my views on Alphabet to at least be correct, and that's why I'm rolling this out to August, trying to collect more premium and essentially buying more time for this Alphabet trade to continue working out in my favor.
Thanks, Tony, for that context. Yeah, I find that rolling option trades is always it can be a tricky situation. A lot of clients are thinking it's going to maybe save an old trade, but really, as you pointed out, it's just a way to either extend the thesis if the trade is still intact while also managing risk. So, Tony, as always, it's great to have you back on the program. It's great to be here with you. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and trade ideas with our audience today. And thank you to all the viewers for showing up today. We definitely appreciate it. And you'll notice we're taking a paying close attention to the registration questions that come in. I've seen ones from Benjamin, Christina, everybody who's coming in. And we just want to say, we see the main question that keeps coming back up time and time again, which is, hey, how do I get started with trading options? Do you have any courses on the basics? So to answer these questions, we've organized a 3-part webinar that's coming up later this month. It's going to be called Learn to Trade Options, Fundamentals and Trading Strategies. We're going to host that on July 23rd, so mark your calendars, from 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern time. So going to be an all-day event there for you, hours of content about the basics of options. During this content, we'll explore buying options, selling options, as you probably heard today, risks, considerations like time, things that just, you know, are good to know if you're a newer option traders that others in the industry may not take the time to explain to you. So I definitely encourage everybody to go ahead and sign up for that again on July 23rd. Where do you find that? Fidelity.com. Obviously, you go to our webinars and sign up there. Now, as always, though, please don't forget to tune in and sign up for the follow-up session for this episode for In the Money. The Trading Strategy Desk hosts that session, which is going to be tomorrow, Friday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can always sign up by going to fidelity.com/inthemoneyfollowup. Again, fidelity.com/inthemoneyfollowup. And if you're someone who loves reading like I do, maybe you missed today's episode, you can always read our Active Investor weekly newsletter. You can sign up for there by going to fidelity.com/activeinvestorweekly. But it's great having everybody here. Thanks for taking your time and spending it here with us at Fidelity. I look forward to seeing you in the next episode of In the Money. Until then, take care.
Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of characteristics and risks of standardized options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options, such as spreads, straddles, and collars, as compared with a single option trade.
The securities of smaller, less well-known companies can be more volatile than those of larger companies. Stock markets are volatile and can fluctuate significantly in response to company, industry, political, regulatory, market, or economic developments. Investing in stock involves risks, including the loss of principal.
Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you're most comfortable with. As with all of your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Indexes are unmanaged. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play, and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use. Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Copyright 2026, FMR LLC. All rights reserved.
Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.